Hey folks, welcome back to the next episode of The Main Scoop. I'm Greg Lotko, and I'm joined by my co-host here, Dan Newman. Good to see you, Dan.
Greg, it is good to be back. We are in the chair, a lot going on. Got a great conversation today. We're going to talk about the economy, economics, technology, yeah. Things that I really love to talk about. And of course, smidgen of mainframe.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about the world. We're going to talk about the economics of technology. We know that companies around the world invest in a lot of different technologies to run their operations. It's a hybrid world. We've talked about that before. It's about using the right platform, using the right software, applying technology for the end goal of running one's business, right? But they all want to do it more successful than their competitors, more successfully.
You know, tech is deflationary. Techonomics, you know, the idea that tech makes us more efficient and productive. And of course, you're seeing trillion-dollar companies now, many of them, in fact. And we are seeing a multi-trillion-dollar boon in the economy. But of course, we've got this continuum of technology, which is what we focus here on The Main Scoop. We talk about all of it. You know, we've heard this before on recent episodes, but it is a hybrid technological world, not just hybrid cloud.
Yep.
It is the hybrid technological landscape of every business enterprise. And that's what we're going to cover today.
All right. So let's pull in our guest for this episode, Dr. Howard Rubin from Rubin Worldwide. So welcome back. I know it's been a while. About 2 years ago, you were with us January 2023. So tell those who maybe didn't see that episode, tell us a little bit about Rubin Worldwide.
Yeah, well, if they didn't see that episode, they missed a heck of a lot. So
I agree.
I'll have to catch them up. Yeah, it's good. But anyway, actually, and then it was almost a hybrid world, or actually the hype was trying to make it a non-hybrid world and sort of a cloud monolith world, and that sort of folded. But I think the main things that are interested, and you start to mention things about technology and the economy. I mean, my take is, I see a lot of researchers saying we're in the fourth industrial revolution. There's nothing industrial about what's going on today. It's technology, and we're in a technology economy, which is wildly different. I mean, I would define technology economics as understanding the interplay of technology with competitiveness of nations, impact on health, education, and welfare, quality of life, and a whole bunch of other things. And there are very few researchers that are looking at that. And you can see by my age, I've been around for a while. And about 30 years ago, I said, something is going on. I ought to start collecting data about technology and then start figuring out what it sort of means. And I've been sort of following a Charles Darwin kind of path of things, because the field is so new that technology got into business about 60 years ago. And classical economics has been around since the 1700s. And even the Federal Reserve can prove that no one knows how the heck that works. So don't expect we know a lot about, you know, technology economics, but you can look at patterns. So my world is a lot about studying what I call the patterns of the digital Galapagos and looking at different industries and different mixes of technology and choices and what they do, and try to model them and get an idea of how they work together.
So when you're doing that modeling, I mean, you look at a lot of different things, right? So I know that you've looked at this as kind of a technology class optimization, and you provided an update, right, in the last couple of years, and got into things about revenue per IT dollar spend and run change ratios and cost of goods. So can you talk to us a bit about, you know, what you're seeing?
Yeah, I think a few things. You're talking about the hybrid world. And in a hybrid world, if you go back in time in technology, you'll see, well, it really started a lot with, what is it, you know, electronic EAM machines, electronic, you know, accounting machines and adding machines and things like that. And then you start moving forward. You got the mainframe computers. Then everyone thought distributed is going to save us. Then client server is going to save us. Then the internet's going to save us. So, but you know, when you go back in time, everything is a mix. So there seems to be a place for everything. And when we start talking about hybridization and the impact it is, the thing that's fascinated me is over looking at the evolution of the use of compute resources. How do you make choices? And if you were a financial, you know, if I was a financial advisor and you told me your risk profile and stuff like that, we talk about what you put your money into, whether it's, you know, equities or debt or cryptocurrency. And you know,
but it would always be multiple things, right? It would be a balanced portfolio. You might have a heavier mix here or there, but you're right. In your financial investments, you would kind of turn the knobs and dials and have a different mix. And I also agree. What we've seen through the evolution of technology is each time a new thing came along, everybody thought that was going to be the be-all, end-all. You said it as it was going to save us. I don't know that it was necessarily save our souls or save our business, but we thought it was going to be the ultimate savior of efficiency for everything we were trying to apply technology to. But we've learned over and over again that, you know, the new things do something well, but not necessarily everything well. And that's how we end up with a mix, right?
Yeah, and that's why I started, you know, and you used the term already, that I started looking at different compute and different platforms as asset classes. So again, like with equities, debt, or out to crypto or something else, they're asset classes, and you sort of choose an asset class mix, or it sort of happens to you. And you start taking a look at different technologies, whether it's a mainframe, whether it's a distributed, whether it's public cloud or private cloud, or eventually be quantum computing or something else out there. You take a look at the mix of those asset classes, and you look at the economics of those classes, their scalability, the security, and all the different parameters of them, even talent availability. And you can understand the difference of those asset classes. And I said, empirically, you start watching, what I do is I start watching this digital Galapagos of what's the performance look like in different mixes, especially as they mature. So, you know, I actually, some of the early stuff in cloud, I was just going to say, it was like I coached Little League soccer, and the other coaches, you know, all the kids followed where the ball was, the goal, and everybody
the
went there.
Of bees. So everybody,
yeah, that's right. Everyone just swarm out, is like swarm into the cloud. And I, you know, this will sound rude. I've asked some CIOs, do they want their tombstone, he or she, take the tombstone to say he or she with the most stuff on the cloud wins. It just doesn't work that way. It's he or she who gets the most results out of their technology mix wins. And you tune that to the business. And you can see that in the metrics. That's some of the stuff you started to bring up.
So talk about those metrics. I mean, obviously, cloud hasn't lived up to the panacea that it was going to be the be-all, end-all, and it was going to be as efficient for every workload. But you've developed a strategy for how you look across different platforms and you determine the value of it. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, some of the things where the platforms start to manifest itself, and you mentioned one measure. I mean, you know, for a for-profit business, it's really interesting. It's what's the cost of supporting your revenue of the cost of supporting a customer? And, you know, when you bring that end to end, it's easy to look at the revenue and technology, but you're really in a business that does transactions. You're banking, you're doing deposits, you're doing oil, you're doing, you know, exploration. What's your technology cost of goods? So there are a whole bunch of factors. So some of them are the financial. Some of them have to do with bringing it back to the business and the customer, and even to net promoter scores of how, you know, how you're doing with your customers, and even out to carbon footprint. So the whole bunch of parameters to look at. And the interesting thing, and you use the word hybrid a lot, you find people who have sort of a monoline strategy, we're all cloud, we're all on-prem cloud, or we're all mainframe. They're outperformed by the people who are choosing the mix. And, you know, with financial portfolios, it's sort of the same thing, except probably for cryptocurrency this week, but that'll have its hills and valleys. But it's usually not a mono choice. And there's some big differences. And the differences in choices may have effect on those parameters. And we'll find companies that are making discerning choices and adjusting them over time are tending toward a hybrid balance that really favors on one end mainframe and public cloud or private cloud, if they're big enough to operate the scale, and they're shrinking the distributed server platforms. But the gap between companies that are, you call best in class or best performing metrics versus those in these sort of monoline strategies or monolithic strategies is pretty incredible. Even in terms of operating the business, you'll find revenue gaps in banking. The folks that are doing clever things with the IT and doing the balance and maxing things to the needs, they may be generating they're generating generally higher margins because they're using technology more efficiently to drive operational excellence. They're doing it much better to get customer intimacy. They're doing it much better to get product leadership, and they're having better security. So you'll find almost order of magnitudes difference in some of the numbers, and even simple things. Because if you have this, you know, a single platform, you're supporting it. You have to keep the terms run versus change. Use run versus change. Run versus change ratios are very well. The average company that's using these sort of old style single line strategies, and this goes across a database of 3,000 companies for about 30 years, is 70% of the cost to run, 30% is being able to change or invest in growing the business, while the companies that have a good balanced strategy and have a best in class hybrid mix, their economics are wildly different. And the economics look like not 70-30 run. They're almost inverted. They're 40-60 or 55-45. So making those choices has economic effects, but it has effects on what's going to happen out to the business. And you'll see that in other ratios, like even what you call technology cost of goods and banking. And again, it depends on the size of, you know, the trading. It might be cost you 11 cents for trade is your technology cost of goods for trade. You go for a best in class organization, you go further out, it's like 25 or 30 cents because the choices aren't optimized toward the goal. And it's just like having a financial advisor. I call this stuff technology asset class optimization. The abbreviation is TACO. So I could have Taco Tuesday with the people I work with. It's a lot of fun. We don't necessarily eat, but those are some of the highest level ideas. And that's what companies still look at.
So I like the thread line. And I remember when we had you on in 2023, we talked a lot about these things. That was about 2 months after ChatGPT had sort of taken the world by storm. Craig will pick on me when I do this, but I can't seriously go down this path without talking about the impact of AI on the enterprise IT stack, right? So now these companies are doing these technology class optimizations. I like where you're heading with that, but the cost is different. The timelines are different. You have 1 or 2 year cycles. As you go down this path though, because I like everything you're saying and I like how you're thinking about it, but the enterprise has to be kind of in a state of massive reevaluation right now because they can't possibly be thinking exactly about infrastructure purchases and utilizations the same when you have all these new architectures, GPUs, XPUs, DPUs, and CPUs. And of course, they're trying to stand this stuff up really, really fast. And of course, integrate it with mainframes, integrate it with existing CPU infrastructure, integrate it with on-prem cloud, private data centers, everything else. How is that kind of evolving your thinking about what you do?
It's evolving in the press. It's not evolving in real life. When you sample all these companies and you look at their IT spending, I gave you a number before that about 70% on average is being spent to run the business, 30% is to grow the business or transform the business. That stayed the same for 5 years. So if people are wildly investing on the other side of the equation, and not everybody is getting into AI, it doesn't mean this stuff is bad, but you hit the press versus the reality. And for example, public cloud spending for the past 5 years has stayed at 4-5% of IT budget, period. This is based on the sample. You can look at the Gartner reports and everything else. So things that you'd think would be growing aren't growing. And if people were throwing money into AI universally, that would expand out and it would change the run change balance universally. But it's just not.
Help me
so
make
this
sense
is not
of that
about it.
Yeah, help me make sense of that though when you have cloud growth rates at 20-30%.
Because the cloud growth rates of 20-30% are including the SaaS load, not the public cloud load. Because people talk about who's on cloud. SaaS is a major driver of cloud going up. And you know, if you look across industry, it gets interesting. You'll find that on average, you'll see public cloud. Cloud is looked at about 18% of IT spending. But of that, maybe of the 18%, maybe 14% is SaaS influence on it, and the rest is the IIS and PaaS stuff. So it's nothing wrong with it, but things aren't growing. And if you look at, there's an S curve on cloud growth, and you'll see the headlines about whether it's AWS or we're going on a whole different topic than you want to talk about. You look at AWS or Azure or somewhere, those numbers aren't that clear what's going on. When they talk about the growth, they load a lot of stuff into it. But I'm talking about making a platform choice and putting your stuff on those platforms versus using someone who's using those platforms. So you get a lot of growth with the blow up of SaaS. But when you take a look at the pure use of these technologies, it's just not there as the way you think it is.
And we talk technology across the board. So don't worry, we're all on topic. I'm curious. I want to poke with you, Daniel, because I was trying to figure out, it seemed like you were trying to lead with that he's talking about an evaluation of where your technology spend is and having an approach that ensures or at least puts discipline into it that you're getting a return on that value for the dollar that you're investing and that it's helping you optimize your technology stack. Maybe I misread, but were you trying to say, hey, look, there's so much going on in AI that you need to lean in heavier and you need to invest ahead of that curve?
How that stack is being, how it's evolving. We all know that there's the 10 or 15 mega companies putting all this CapEx dollars into buying. And then of course you have all the cloud companies standing up this infrastructure and making it available for rent. Because most companies can't, by the way, most companies aren't going to stand up frontier models. They're going to take the off-the-shelf models, and then what they're going to do is they're going to tune those models, or they're going to rag existing on-prem data off the existing infrastructure that I was talking about. But I guess what I am saying is ultimately, they have to have access to these, you know, well, I mean, you can obviously inference on a CPU or a mainframe, but you have to have, you know, access to these additional compute. You're going to need a lot more network capacity to move data. The inferencing location might be in the cloud. It might be on-prem. It might be at the edge. It might be on the device. And we're seeing all that happen. But we also, and I would like you as an analyst, we track this market. And, you know, we have hundreds of companies that we've tracked. I think about 700 CIOs, about $15 billion of spend that we track. And we know that the biggest initiative coming from the board is how do they implement AI. Now, again, what we're sort of talking about is the diffusion of innovation curve. And what Howard's suggesting is maybe they're not there yet. But what I'm That's saying right. is that what the board is saying to them is use AI.
Yeah, but I think there's
kind of interesting to see where we're
I think there's two
the
things
board
intersecting
used to say use
here.
Cloud until that blew up in their
yeah,
face.
Yeah, and that's where I was going.
Or nice your mask.
I think there's two things intersecting here. I agree, whether it be boards or companies or technologists, there's a huge belief that AI is going to dramatically change everything that's going on with technology. There are a ton of companies that are saying, hey, invest in AI. We need to be doing something with this. However, and this is where I think it marries to a lot of the work that Dr. Howard Rubin has done, those that are being successful aren't just investing in AI for AI's sake. They have a method to their madness, or right. they have a purpose. They understand what problem it is that they're trying to solve, or what business opportunity they're trying to go after. So they're investing in AI with purpose. I do believe there's a ton of people out there, a ton of businesses, unfortunately, that are investing in AI without purpose. They're thinking they're going to discover along the way on implementation of what the heck they're going to use this for. And that is not going to make them more successful compared to the
And I'm
going
to put this back to Dr. Rubin, but what I will say is there is this sort of curve of AI consumption. So I guess I was just trying to understand how it fits. It sounds to me like at this point, it doesn't actually change the math very much.
No, actually, no, because if you watch what's going on, look, I watch things from a very high level. So this is nothing about anti-AI, but you know, the press and the markets are thrilled with AI, like they get thrilled with the latest new shiny thing. But you made the point, you have to be discerning of where you're applying and expecting some outcome and know to use it. And know even the limitations of things like a ChatGPT, because a ChatGPT is fundamentally, it's a patterning thing. It's not giving you very insights. It's you know, it's very powerful for what it's doing, and it's first of its kind. But if you watch what's going on with IT spending, I'll just tell you an interesting thing. 2023, and this is just a survey, it's more than 2,500 companies, survey going from 23 to 24, the average IT budget increase was 4.1%. worldwide across all these companies. That's a terrible average number. It's like climate change. It's two degrees warmer. It
doesn't even beat inflation. Well, maybe.
Well, IT inflation is the highest inflation in the world. No one's been tracking that. I'm tracking it because in 2023, it was the first, 2023-24, was the first time IT inflation, that's the cost of salaries, software, hardware, managed services, and everything else, IT inflation hit 4.8%. It was higher than the budget increases. So in fact, companies were starting to get eaten alive because their increases didn't cover the cost of inflation. It's like being at home. It's higher than GDP growth. It's higher than anything in the world. And by That was in January of 2024. By July, it was up to 5.8%. And now folks are thinking that it's going to about 6% next year. Now, the Gartner projector, and I have an alliance with Gartner. Gartner, I think, is projecting that IT spending is going to increase 7.5% going into 2025. Well, even if 6% of that inflation, that means your net increase is 1.5%. If you speak Yiddish, that's bupkis. So it's really not going to affect anything. And most of the issue is that inflation is going to hit your basic keep the lights on cost. And if it keeps your lights on cost, that's your run costs. So how does that squeeze your ability to invest? So you made a comment that only the biggest could invest. So you get a JP Morgan Investor Relations. They hire 2,000 people in data analytics and AI or some number like that. They could put billions of dollars into that thing. And you made the point that the second wave of this stuff for people that are going to be leveraging and using the capacity of the others, the tech and companies that invested. So you have a good model over there, but it's sort of interesting because with all this explosion and worldwide, I'm talking a lot, worldwide IT spending is now going to approach about $9 trillion in 2025. That is the third largest economy in the earth. The biggest is US, then China. So it's the third largest economy out there. And it's growing a bit faster than GDP. But right now, inflation has gotten into that economy, and that's driving some of the growth.
So that was a ton of numbers and a ton of data. But to simplify it, what it's really getting to is if you're spending 70% on your run, if you only have 30% on change, if your budget is growing less than your costs are, it absolutely highlights the importance of where you're investing each dollar.
That's exactly.
Especially that new stuff, the stuff in change. So you should be investing with purpose. And the reality is we know that there have been a bunch of edicts on high about a particular technology to say, hey, we've got to do this. I don't know what the heck we're going to do with it, but you figure it out. We got to go there.
Yep.
And I know what Dr. Howard Rubin has been finding and seeing is those that get the mix right, have a clear competitive advantage. And that has to be, as they're going into this spend, they've got more purpose than getting to a technology or a platform. It's a business purpose that's driving the decision.
And that means connecting technology to business outcomes. You hit it right on the head. Operational efficiency is the easiest outcome to deal with because you're automating
patterns. It's the easiest to measure.
It's the easiest to measure. Number two piece, you start getting into customer experience. Now you're getting into driving sentiments and getting insights from AI into how to drive sentiments where you want it. And the other thing is giving birth to brand new products and having product leadership. So there'll be stages of this kind of stuff, but it goes to your point. So what's the value of making platform choices? And the value of platform choices isn't having the cheapest platform, you know, optimizing the cost of each platform. It's out optimizing the outcome of each platform. And that's the interesting sort of synapse that's missing, because if you focus on your technology economics, you might drive to have the lowest cost mix versus your business. But the other point is, doesn't do it, because the idea is to get the maximum outcome per dollar. So you actually, a company spending more on tech might be doing better than a company that isn't spending a lot on tech because they got the mix in the right place and they're getting the highest yield. So it's really the value of the platforms.
We'll call it techonomics or technology economics. Dr. Rubin, thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And we know that was a deep dive. It was a fun conversation, a little bit of debate, and the future of the tech economy. There's so much more to learn. I hope you will download some of these reports and that you'll be back with us again very soon. But for now, we got to say goodbye. We'll see you all
next time.